Hello, I'm Christopher Badger, a barrister at Six Pump Court, and I'd like to welcome you to the latest Environment Law News podcast, brought to you in association with LexisNexis. In this podcast, we take a look at the announced end to austerity, Glasgow to host COP26, and Mark Carney's views on climate risks and financial decision making. First up, is this the end of austerity? On the 4th of September, Sajid Javid, Chancellor of the Exchequer, delivered his spending round speech, in which he set out the government's spending priorities and promised that the UK has turned the page on austerity. £13.4 billion is to be added to the plans for total public spending. Environmental buzzwords included cleaner energy, greener transport, and a national priority of decarbonisation. The key headline was that DEFRA is to be given £432 million of funding to set world-leading environmental standards. This is actually described by the Treasury as Brexit funding, intended to deliver a safe and ambitious departure from the European Union, while setting global standards in protecting and harnessing value from the natural environment. However, it is right that DEFRA has been pledged a 3.3% increase in total funding, which will take its overall annual budget to £2 billion. Other announcements include £30 million in new money is being provided to tackle air quality, another £30 million is being provided for biodiversity, including an expansion of the Blue Belt programme, and new funding is being provided for bays to develop new programmes to meet the net zero commitment by 2050. No actual detail was given in the spending round on how this additional funding will be implemented. The government is to set out further plans for decarbonisation in the National Infrastructure Strategy, due to be published this autumn. The chair of Natural England has already expressed his disappointment in the level of funding for biodiversity, stating that Natural England cannot do what is necessary without increased investment. Not everyone has been so pessimistic, however. Although the Chancellor didn't give a figure, Chris Stark, Chief Executive of the Committee on Climate Change, stated that the figure of £30 million to be spent on staff and programme expenditure would be, in his words, a potentially huge increase in staffing on net zero. Of course, this could all be for nothing depending on the results of any forthcoming general election. Labour, at its national conference, has committed to slashing greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by 2030 and to nationalise the big six energy companies, despite concerns raised by trade unions about the effect that this might have on the national economy. In response, the CBI has stated that there is no credible pathway to achieving net zero by 2030. And the Financial Times quoted a sceptical trade union figure who complained that the target was simply not deliverable without huge upheaval, job losses, and a consumer backlash. He apparently said, "I'm a father. I don't want to see the planet fry, but some of these people are loons." Second, Glasgow will host COP26. On the 10th of September, the UK government announced that it had received international backing to host the COP26 climate summit in 2020 in Glasgow. The event will bring together over 30,000 delegates from around the world, including climate experts, business leaders and citizens, to agree ambitious action to tackle climate change. The nomination is in partnership with Italy, who will host preparatory events and a significant youth event as part of the agreement. The conference has been described as the most important gathering on climate change since the Paris Agreement was signed in 2015. Lasting for 2 weeks, it will be the largest summit that the UK has ever hosted, with up to 200 world leaders expected to attend on the final weekend. There will no doubt be major security concerns and the need for additional funding, but this is an extraordinary opportunity for the UK to be at the very forefront of tackling climate change at a global level. Meanwhile, Greta Thunberg delivered an impassioned speech at the UN's climate summit, describing world leaders as failing her and her generation. You may have seen a compelling moment when Donald Trump sauntered into the conference to the furious stare of Ms. Thunberg. And at that summit, India, China, and the EU promised to deliver tougher carbon curbing plans in 2020. Finland declared that it would be the first industrialized nation to absorb more carbon than it emits. And Pakistan promised to plant 10 billion trees in the next 5 years. Amazon have also promised to become carbon neutral by 2040, to increase its energy from renewable sources to 100% by 2030, to invest $100 million to restore wetlands and forests, and the company has ordered 100,000 electric delivery vehicles to reduce its fuel consumption, to enter into service in 2021. There is, however, real criticism that the steps that are being promised are simply not enough. Many green groups are adamant that the commitments from major nations are nowhere near what is needed to stabilize the climate. Finally, on the 24th of September 2019, the Bank of England published two speeches given by Mark Carney, Governor of the Bank of England, in which he called for climate risks and resilience to be brought into the heart of financial decision-making. He identified three areas. First, disclosure. Whilst highlighting the demand for disclosure in line with the framework set out by the Task Force on Climate-Related Disclosures and improvements that have been made, Mr. Carney called for disclosure to be made mandatory. Now, the UK government announced in its green strategy published this July that it expects all listed companies and large asset owners to report climate risks by 2022. And there's also a joint task force currently considering the most appropriate path to mandatory disclosure. Second, risk management. The providers of capital and those who supervise them all need to improve their understanding and management of climate-related financial risks. Changes in climate policies, new technologies, and growing physical risks will prompt reassessments of the values of virtually every financial asset. The Bank of England has just set out its supervisory expectations for the governance, management, and disclosure of climate-related financial risks by banks and insurers. Finally, returns. Sustainable investing must catalyse and support all companies that are working to transition from brown to green. Such tilt investment strategies, which overweigh high environmental, social and governance stocks, and momentum investment strategies, which focus on companies that have improved their ESG rating, have outperformed global benchmarks, according to Mr. Carney, for close to a decade. The mainstreaming of such strategies and the tools to pursue them are essential. Mr. Carney highlighted that inconsistent measurement of ESG is one of the biggest hurdles and stated that we need a common taxonomy to help financial markets rigorously identify environmental outperformance and to direct investment accordingly. ESG and improved corporate reporting are becoming an increasingly important area of corporate governance, even if it may be felt that effective regulation and mandatory requirements in this area are still lacking. Expect this to be on the agenda for years to come. Thank you for tuning in for this Environment Law News podcast. For more information on any of these stories, or if you would like to discuss any of the topics raised in more detail, please contact Six Pump Court on 0207 797 8400 asking for Christopher Badger, or contact our colleagues at LexisNexis in the PSL Environment team.